Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mulio Gabaza, and for today, we are getting into a conversation that continues something that we've been following for some time, and that is the journey of Mesh.Trade. They are a platform that is in the realm of financial markets, for cross-asset issuance, trade, investment, and management of digital and financial assets. We've spoken to Connie Bloom, who is the founder and executive head at Mesh.Trade, a couple of times on this platform, first getting a sense of what's been happening in that business. It's also come up, when we've spoken to the likes, of Convergence Partners, because they are one of the investors in that particular business. So we've heard about this platform from, multiple angles. But for today, we are talking to them about some of the action that is happening for them, in the world of, capital raises, and some of the ways in which, they are saying that they are going to be disrupting the world of capital raising. They recently helped to complete a corporate tokenized bond. This is said to be the first in Africa, and it was done in a matter of weeks. That's 100 million rand, and we're just going to get a sense of, what does it mean in the world of, decentralized finance, tokenization, and all of the things that are related. Connie, greetings to you today.
Hi, it's lovely to join you again.
Okay, so I think I have given, the quick summary of, Mesh.Trade from what we understand. And, this is not our first rodeo, with your platform. So maybe you could give us an understanding of the significance of being able to raise 100 million rand in a matter of weeks using a tokenized bond. The approach I'm keen to get is that there's a lot of pieces inside there. Firstly, one needs to even understand what a bond is. And then secondly, they need to understand what a tokenized bond is. So, let's go through it.
Absolutely. Well, as you said, it is quite unique and very significant for the South African market in general that this has now occurred. You mentioned that this happening within the timeline of weeks is very interesting. And on top of that, I would also put another bit of statistics for you, is that 17% of the bonds actually purchased in this market was purchased by retail investors. So people like you and myself who actually stepped into something new and wonderful for them to be able to include that in their portfolios. So let's maybe break it down. Let's look at from an entrepreneurial point of view, why that's significant, and also from an investor point of view, why that is important as well.
Yeah.
From an entrepreneurial point of view, what is generally occurring in the market right now is that if you're not a company that's the size of a company that can list, so think about anything JSE top 40, then the places for you actually to go out into the market and raise capital is very limited. You can go for venture capital, you can go for private equity, you can also go to banks to get loans and so forth. But when you're in that awkward size, just below listing and just over let's say 100 million, there's very few people that can actually service you. And it's also a very convoluted space within the market because there's so much regulation, so much red tape, so many hurdles for you to get into the market. And we saw this opportunity, and we have built Mesh for those entrepreneurs and for them to be able to go into the market and raise 100 million, which is not an insignificant amount of money, within the matter of weeks, and actually deploy that money straight back into their businesses is so unique. Because generally, raising this amount of capital takes you more than 6 months. And with Mesh, we can currently take a client out to market in less than 3 months. So that is halving the period of time that it takes for them to go out to market. Now, we've also included a retail component, and you mentioned quite eloquently that now you have the concept of a token and a bond on top of it. Aren't these things complex, and aren't they difficult to understand? Well, yes and no. Because it's our job to make it simple. It's our job to make sure that everyone that invests in these kind of assets actually knows what they're getting into and the kind of risks associated with the company that they're investing into. So it's not difficult. It is actually very easy. You and I can explore that today. But for our investors, what is unique here is we've taken this very complex sounding asset, which generally only banks get to invest into, or like asset managers get to invest into. And we took that minimum amount, that's generally $1 million, and we cut that right down to 5,000 Rand per investment, making it accessible for more and more people to be able to invest into and get a prime plus 2% return on top of that, which is fantastic. That outperforms any kind of fixed income investment that you can make at this stage.
All right. Maybe one of the things that we can do, because we've now understood the mechanism, this particular capital raise, a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Who was the actual issuer of the bond? And also maybe you could give us a glimpse of the, you know, behind the curtain as to the types of conversation or the types of requirements that they had, you know, before you guys went to market.
Yes, the issuer of this asset was the Morse Initiative. So what they do is they build networks of schools, and they have a very unique model in the market where they have a very well-defined and well like developed technology platform that actually democratizes how education also occurs within our market. And what they're utilizing this money for is building out those networks of schools. So they took that 100 million and now they've purchased 12 more schools to become part of their network, which is fantastic just to hear that in general. But when they approached us, they had some very unique requirements. They knew that they were a business for the people, and they really wanted to include their community within this raise. Because generally, you can very easily ring fence it and only have institutional clients or institutional investors involved in it. But it was extremely important for them to have their network and their community being able to participate in it. So if you send one of your kids to one of their schools, it must be realistic for you to be able to purchase one of these bonds as well and invest into the future of the company that's actually building your child's future as well. So that was one of the big requirements that came out of it. So it was a offer to the public. With that, 100 million is not an insignificant amount of money, especially when it comes to school networks and what the investing community would be able to invest into. And we try to keep the cost as low as possible. They are cost sensitive. All companies, all entrepreneurs are always cost sensitive. So they wanted to keep it as low as possible. So those three big requirements were the ones that we were approached with, and how we could then eventually structure it into this Morse Prime Plus 2% bond, which then included the entire community. And as I mentioned earlier, we included 17% of the retail segment was actually the base that invested into this company's future.
It's very interesting, you know, that, you know, this is the mechanism that this school network or network of schools would actually pick to go about, you know, raising capital. I guess it shows a willingness to try something different, or at least, you know, put their faith, you know, in what sounds like, you know, it could be complex. But like you said, you know, the world of fixed income and bonds and that type of thing has traditionally only been open to, you know, banks and, you know, maybe more established, you know, finance houses. But, you know, the accessibility has meant that almost a fifth of the people that invested in this, you know, in this raise were your typical, you know, retail investors. And I think it's good from that point of view. Now, because we are a business platform, we do need to ask for something like that. Obviously, you've got your trade secrets, so, you know, you can tell us whatever you can share. From a mesh.trade point of view, when it comes to something like that, an important discussion, especially when you're helping to raise funding of some sort, you know, people that are maybe considering an option like this might want to actually understand, what do the costs look like? You know, if, let's say, Mudiwa has, you know, Mudiwa Enterprises, and I'm also in the market to raise 100 million Rand. What am I looking at from a cost point of view, especially if I'm going to go through the mesh.trade platform?
Absolutely. And Luckily for you, there's not that much secret sauce in this component. I think the biggest thing for entrepreneurs to take into consideration here is that as a platform, as Mesh, we are trying to open up the capital markets to all. And I think especially with South Africa just going through the elections, it's so important that we all look at how we can grow the economy. And the economy currently is growing because of these entrepreneurial ventures going out to market and actually establishing their business and growing faster. The only way that you can get your business to grow faster is if you can actually get capital into the business at the right points in time to actually get that growth going through. So when a company approaches us, we take into consideration kind of all of the above. We're looking at what their size is, when they're trying to get out to market, how quickly they need to get to that capital, the kind of investor market that they are targeting with this. And then also the general business metrics. We have to make sure that our investors also need to have the confidence that the people that we are bringing through, that they actually trust it. So they have good board structures going, they have audited financial results, all those kind of things in place, and then the contracting components as well. So with regards to this, we go for a kind of blended approach. If you have investors already standing, we can take you through to market at like a percentage of 1.5% of the raise. If you then also require us to obtain those investors, we do it for a little bit more, but we're always very competitive with what you see in the market. And we actually undercut a lot of the expenses that you generally see in the market. So both from a timing perspective, from a legal perspective, and then from an actual capital raising perspective. I've not seen anyone pricing as competitive as we do at this stage.
Typically, for people that are going out and raising that amount of money, just from a comparison point of view, what are they typically looking at?
From a costing perspective,
Yes.
typically, if you go out with an agent, and this is within the private market, you're looking for at around 3.5 to 5% just from the agency fees. Now, I'm not even covering fees such as listing fees, contracting fees, and so forth. So all of that comes up on top of it. Generally, you will be looking at anything ending between 5 to 8% of the amount that you're raising at the end of the day.
And when it comes to other types of bond structures, you tend to have, you mentioned it just now, fees around listing and that type of thing. I'm thinking of a Euro bond, for example. You might have it, sitting in Dublin or something like that, right? In a case like this, is that the same structure? Is the bond, listed in this particular case? Is it listed on mesh.trade, or is there, maybe a centralized hub, through which people can then access it? I guess that then talks to the access that we spoke about earlier on. How is it that the retail investors, for example, were able to get, to get access?
I like that you mentioned the Eurobond, because we also have a very exciting example coming up quite soon within the form of a preference share. And that is another kind of funding instrument that I think is very relevant at this time. And how are we bringing forth that accessibility? How are we making sure that people can still trade it and access it, even if it is to a certain extent international? And if your companies and your investors are also in different places in the world, I think the first thing to take note of is that Mesh is not a stock exchange. So like the JSE, or like your London Stock Exchange or Luxembourg and so forth, Mesh is not a stock exchange. So how does these assets actually go out to market, and how do we make sure that it fits all the regulatory requirements? So the first thing, it depends yet again on the kind of investors that need to step into it. But when you have a retail component investing into these assets, we make sure that we always register a prospectus document with SIPC on it. So that makes sure that there's a regulatory body within the South African context that looks at the legal constructs and says this is safe for retail investors to invest into. And then we then step over to the world of decentralization. we said that it's on blockchain, we said it's on tokens. So automatically we step into it like a different technical realm. So when you have something listed on an exchange, it's generally very restricted to that network that you can get into. So either the stock exchanges or the brokerage kind of networks that you can interact with. But within this case is there's a prospectus registered, there's a token. So effectively, if the issuer doesn't want to restrict it, this asset can trade internationally. But now we have to still remember that we operate in the real world, and there's regulations and there is exchange control, and there's all sorts of barriers that we have. But also you can choose who you want to have invested in, into your company or into your asset. So for this kind of bond that we just put out, the issuer wanted to restrict it to only sort of African-based investors. But if you have the case of a Eurobond, as you mentioned, or you have your company within Mauritius, but you want South African investors to take place in it, Mesh is also a regulated entity, and we can guide you through those complexities. So don't let those complexities scare you. Look at your business, look at where your capital needs to come from and how you want to grow your business, and let us take care of the networks to get it there. We are an international business, we are an international platform, so we can operate across these kind of jurisdictions and across these barriers as well.
That certainly makes sense when you know, the way that you've just explained it. Just a quick follow-up on my side. Because, of course, you know, Mesh.Trade is not, is not an exchange. In this particular case, you know, when you guys went to market, where was it listed, you know, for people to actually go and access?
There is no listing. That is the unique thing. It is completely unlisted, this asset, but it's fully regulated as well. So you don't need a listing to do this.
Okay, cool. And because of that, because I just wanted to get that full clarity, because what I wanted to get at is, with something like this having been done, right, do you see scope and appetite already in terms of, you know, more people or more companies coming to market in this way? Like, how far do you see an instrument like this, you know, I guess, taking flight?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of appetite, actually. We're bringing out a new issuer into the market at the start of August, and it's on this preference share that I just mentioned, which is so unique because generally this asset class was yet again restricted to the realm of institutional investors. It is a lovely, lovely kind of opportunity to take that out to market. But we have a whole host of entrepreneurs knocking at our door at this stage to go out to market, and we're seeing a lot of traction in this space. And the most of the companies in this African context is actually within the segment. So there should be a lot of appetite, and we hope to see a lot more companies approaching us to take advantage of this avenue for them.
You know, when it comes to things that are done on a blockchain, one of the things that people advocate for, or one of the reasons for the blockchain, has always been the piece around accountability, the piece around a public ledger, and you know, the piece around you know, having transparent transactions, you know, that can be publicly be verified and all of that. In a situation like this, let's say, people that invested in this particular bond, all of that stuff. How much of, you know, let's say I was one of the people that, you know, went on and invested in this particular bond. How much of my information is, I guess, readily available? I guess what I'm asking is, I guess, the tension between my privacy as an investor versus the transparency needs of, you know, of the blockchain?
I think that's a very relevant question. And there is a difference between transparency and sharing all personal information with everyone in the world. Neither I nor you would be comfortable if anyone can see all your compliance kind of information. This is something that is contained within all kind of privacy and security conversations at this stage. Never do you actually want to have your full name and surname and your verifiable identity, like number with your house address being available to anyone on platform or on in the world. But where transparency comes through for Mesh specifically and why you need the blockchain to do this is, firstly, you can verify transactions. You can verify where cash has flown to or from. And then you can also verify ownership. And this ownership is then associated with a blockchain account in which these assets are contained and maintained. And if there was any time a regulatory inquiry, they can contact us as an accountable institution, but also as a regulated institution to put your identity with your account. But nowhere can you actually access the blockchain and see that account 3020 is owned by Modiwa. You can just see that there was an asset purchase and there's something held in that account, but you can't actually connect that identity. I can't say that it's impossible to put identity with a name, but you would have to go through a lot of data engineering and a lot of transactions to be able to do that. And that is not for anyone to actually do. And you would have to transact quite often. So there's always a risk that someone can identify you, but there's never a risk that we would actually be leaking your information and that would be able to be associated to that extent with that account and your transactions at all.
All right. One of the things that, you know, strikes me is the fact that there's a lot of flexibility that can come to private markets, you know, using an option like this, and especially the type of capital raise that's been done from this point of view. Going forward, because you guys are playing around with different, with different type of structures, obviously, it's still early days. You guys are probably going to be having more and more case studies over time. But at least for now, from what you are seeing, especially because there's a bond and, you know, very soon we're going to have, you know, a preference share, you know, type of offering. How do you see these types of transactions, you know, going on in future? Because in both cases, you know, preference shares are, it's convertible debt, right? Depending on the company and, you know, what they call a preference share. But if we're to take the textbook, the textbook definition, you are buying the shares because you're literally wanting to make a return. Mm-hmm. Whereas an ordinary share, you sort of have to wait and see, you know, good year, bad year, all of that stuff. A bond, exactly. Whereas a bond is, it's almost pure debt, right? And I can imagine that on the side of, you know, the business or the entrepreneur, you're also thinking around, you know, what's the most appropriate way for me to fund my business? Do I want to dilute myself? Am I willing to give away equity? You know, all of these different discussions. So from what you're seeing in this space, how do you see it evolving? Do you see it more around debt type instruments, or do you actually see, you know, equity being traded in this way?
It's an interesting question. As you mentioned, a preference share is convertible equity, and it has certain rights associated with it. And what we've tried to identify in some of these assets that we bring to market and some of these entrepreneurs is we know that it's so important to be able to service those assets, i.e. is there a coupon or is there a dividend? Is there interest payment that makes it more attractive for people to invest into? And we've been trying to work very closely with our entrepreneurs to make sure that these things can be structured in that way. And it depends really on so many aspects as to which side it goes. My personal view is that we will be seeing a lot more debt coming out to the market, which I think is fantastic, because that obviously gives the entrepreneurs a cleaner capital cap table. So as you mentioned, no dilutions, don't have weird shareholding structures and things going on, and it's very easy for you to maintain and cost effective as well. But I'm not opposed to seeing a lot more preference shares and equity kind of structures also coming through, because effectively what we're doing here is we're giving the entrepreneurs the tools back to make the decisions that are best suited for their shareholders and their companies. And they have to do what is right in that regard. And generally in the traditional construct, so your stock exchanges, your private equities, your VCs, you see a lot more equity running, because that's the kind of risk profiles that they're comfortable with. But I think in this segment, we'll definitely see a lot more debt coming through in the coming years. And what is also fantastic with this is debt generally does give your retail investors a predictable return as well.
Mm. Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how the space does evolve, because whether a transaction is happening on the blockchain or whether people are literally having presentations to friends and family at their houses, the real world need is still the same. You know, you've got a product, a solution, or whatever it is, and you're trying to fund it. And, you're also trying to fund it by giving away as little equity, in that particular venture, as possible. So, over time, it will be interesting, to see how some of these things go. And I'm really thinking about it within the context of some of the work and some of the action, some of the noise that's been made around making, I don't know if I can call them private stock exchanges, but there are a couple of them, to say, how do you create, places or markets within which people can have access, to some of these early stage opportunities before some of these companies access, the public markets. Mm. And we've seen a lot of models, and I think this is quite a novel one. Mm. And it's going to be interesting to see, how it evolves over time. Mm. When it comes to the bond aspect, at least, this is at least from our understanding, the first one in Africa, right? Globally, what's the action looking like?
Globally, it's interesting. I think a lot of people are experimenting with what is called real-world asset tokenization. And in this, it's the use case that you mentioned earlier of there's an asset listed on an exchange, and they're just creating a token on it. So it's giving you a right or reference to whatever the underlying listed instrument is. So globally, we're not seeing a lot of movement in this space just yet, because I haven't found this unique connection that Mesh has to actually be able to tell investors what they're truly buying. What is that asset that's sitting behind it? What is that contract that sits behind it? So globally, I'm seeing that there's a lot of movement within the real world asset tokenization. We're seeing a lot of movement, especially within the property segment, but there's also a lot of obscure kind of use cases also happening within that space. But definitely more and more people are pushing against the traditional model of only going out and listing your assets. And they're trying to push more towards a model where there's more people that can be involved in a capital raise. And that's why tokenization is such a relevant topic for them. And generally, when we're looking at the bond use case that is tokenized in the rest of the world, it's not really public offerings such as the one was that we just had. So it's already a pre-existing kind of agreement between two parties, and they're basically just using this tokenization to prove that they can effectively issue a token to one party or to the other. And I would still wager that it's very unique to see what Mesh has done here to do it from the grassroots up, to get everyone involved and not having a pre-arranged agreement, just to showcase that the use case actually works. I would welcome a lot more tokenization companies into the space and tell them to start investigating these kind of areas and pushing towards this. I would very much like to start saying that the central banks must start experimenting more with securities and how bonds can actually act on tokens, and spend a little bit less time on central bank digital currency kind of use cases that have been flogged, I think, up into the spaces that it is right now, and actually showcase to the markets that liquid and fair and transparent markets can actually take place on a tokenized and blockchain-based system.
I know many central bankers around the world that would probably have been throwing tomatoes at the stage right now, because
invite them to bring their retail government bonds in. I would love to run those experiments with them.
No, most certainly, because you do see a lot of action in this space, because as much as it's decentralized finance, it does seem as if, a lot of central bankers are trying to find ways to centralize, that same thing, but, just using, the blockchain. That's just my take, but, I'm sure we could have, deep dive in terms of, some of those things. But where I want to end off, is keeping on the theme, of taking a deep dive. I want us to end on a very nerdy note, maybe getting into the weeds a little bit, around the mechanism, to say you've got 100 million rand that's been raised today. Right. If and I was hoping you could explain the mechanism from both the side of the issuer and on the side of, the investors, to say you've issued the bond, you've been able to raise 100 million rand from this pool of investors. Over time, you sort of have to amortize that debt, right, down, and then pay back the people that have advanced you the money. How is that? What's happening? What are the flows between those two parties? When I'm buying the tokens, I'm probably, converting my cash into a token, and then I'm converting my cash into the token that I'm buying, and that's it. But in the reverse direction, what's happening are my returns coming back to me in my same, let's call it a mesh wallet or a mesh account or whatever it is? Are my returns from this investment coming back to me through that same account? Or is there some separate structure, through which that's happening? And at the end of the period, does my token automatically revert back, to the issuer? All of those, those things, yeah.
I like it when you and I can be nerdy about these things together. And it is interesting. So let's look at this bond as a real life example. So we have an asset that is living for 10 years. So you are expecting, as an investor, to have a blockchain-based account on Mesh in which this bond token now lives. So you have it in your account. So I think the first question that I generally answer on this basis is, if I no longer want to own my assets, what can I do? Must I wait for the 10 years before I can get my money back? Well, the answer is no. There is a secondary market, and you can sell that token back to the market in general if there is a willing buyer available for you to sell to. So firstly, you don't need to stay around for 10 years. You don't need to invest your money for that amount of time. You can always sell it out. But let's say you do want to hold it. How does the dividend or coupon paying component work? So on bonds, it's coupons that you receive. On equities, it's dividends. And as I said, it's a quarterly paying one. So basically what we do every quarter is we look at the rate at which this return is paid. And as I mentioned, it's a prime plus 2%. So we quickly do that calculation of saying 100 million at a prime plus 2% divided by 3 over 12. And now we know what amount needs to be distributed to clients. So we then do a calculation, and we then make sure that each client receives the payment equivalent to the amount of bonds that they hold. And all that you do is you wait for your Mesh account to give you an alert that says, you have just received a dividend every quarter. And that will be in a a stable coin format. So we don't pay it out to your bank account, but you can defund that into your bank account. But you can also decide to take that coupon payment and reinvest into something like a S&P 500 ETF or a Apple share if you want to. Or you can buy more of the bond if it's really something that you desire. So every quarter, you'll be getting this payment coming through to your side and you can just see your investment ticking up. But at the end of the 10 years, now maturity happens. Now, this bond is not an amortizing bond. It does pay back the full investment amount at the end. So you'll get a payment that has two components in it. So it will have your return back, whatever you invested into. So let's say you bought one 5,000 Rand one, plus a little coupon payment with that. Right into your account. And what we as a platform do is we make it easy for you to go through that process. Generally in the market, it's not that easy, but we've automated this all. And what we then effectively do is we mature the instrument. So we tell the issuer, your responsibility is now covered. You don't have any responsibility towards anyone in the market anymore. We make sure that a payment occurs, but also then we burn that token out of your account. So effectively, we just transfer it out and it's no longer an asset in your account because you get that payment taking place at the end. And it's as simple as that. It's not very complex.
All right. I think on that note, that's where we can end off today's discussion. Just, understanding, the mechanism of how people are getting involved in the world of fixed income, backed up by the world of blockchain. Very interesting to hear of a recent capital raise that Mesh.Trade has helped to facilitate 100 million Rand in terms of, in terms of a bond for a network of schools, that is, in South Africa. The issuer just wanted to restrict, the investment to just come from, South Africans or people in South Africa. But Connie just letting us know that, you can easily have this being open, to people internationally. Over time, we wait to see how all of these things are going to evolve. But she does predict that we're likely to see more action on the side of debt, as opposed to, equity type transactions. They have an upcoming preference share deal, and we'll just keep an eye out, from that point of view. I think for me, one of the things that also is, quite interesting is the fact that as much as we talk about transparency, transparency does not necessarily mean, that people's information is open to the world. And that's, probably something good to know and hear about, especially in a climate like the one that we're in, where, people's data is very sensitive. And, we are trying to encourage as much investment as possible. And if we can reduce some of the barriers, or at least some of these fears that people might have, then we are likely to see, more action from that point of view. And also, just understanding how, that mechanism works, the fact that almost everything, at least from an investor point of view, is happening through, that digital wallet. You can, invest through it, but you are also getting your returns through that same account in the form of a stable coin, which you can, then use, to defund into your account or invest into something else. But through that account, that's where, almost everything is happening. And also at the same time, the fact that you've got companies that are taking a lot of the admin that would likely keep some of the smaller players, out of the market, because that's what tends to happen. And we do even see it in the listed space, that we are seeing a lot of delistings because some of the mid to small cap companies just say that the administrative burden of listing an equity on an exchange, you know, is a bit too much for them. So if we parallel that in this particular space, you know, if you have someone who's going out and saying, actually, I can help you to calculate, you know, how much you owe your pool of investors, and we can facilitate, you know, all of that stuff, once again, goes towards the reducing of friction and, you know, reduction of admin that your entrepreneurs and business people will have to deal with. Going forward, it will be interesting to see how the space does evolve and just how many entrepreneurs will take this on, because people keep talking about funding and accessing, you know, capital, and you know how big this is going to become over time. So that's been it. We were in conversation, you know, talking to Connie Bloom, who is co-founder and executive head at Mesh.Trade. She joins us from Paris. Connie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.